Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com. As usual, I'm back here in California after our wonderful Recreating Revolutionary Communities, or bus tour, that went from Eugene, Oregon, down to Fresno, and many stops in between, and we just had so many exciting adventures, and we talked to so many people who have been creating revolutionary communities or want to help us create these systems outside of the disease systems that we live under today. But I've been sending out blasts and information about the tour that we were just on, so you can check that out at CindySheehanSoapbox.blogspot.com. And we're planning another tour in the spring of 2012 to go from the West Coast to East, however far people want us to stop in their community. So that would be a gigantic loop around the U.S., and we're very excited about this project, and we're very excited about the tour. It just gave us so much energy, and we think we were able to inspire and motivate people in the communities that we stopped in. Well, today we have our very dear soapbox friend and my very dear personal friend, retired Colonel Ann Wright, and she's going to talk about the Gaza flotilla, and she's going to talk about her recent trip to South Korea. Ann, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Well, thank you, Cindy. It's a pleasure to be on your show again. It's been a long time.
Well, I think you might be the person we've had on the most on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. So it's always great to talk to you. And how are you doing? How are you holding up?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm back from the Gaza flotilla after almost 2 months of being in Greece trying to battle the Israelis. And now I'm back in Hawaii taking a little break and just got back from a quick trip to South Korea to be there to work with South Koreans on protesting at the construction of a naval base on a beautiful, pristine little island off the coast of South Korea.
Okay, well, let's talk about these things that you've been up to lately. And first of all, tell me and my listeners, I haven't seen you probably since April in New York, I think, was the last time that we actually physically bumped into each other. But tell my listeners what you, tell them all about the Gaza Freedom Flotilla, first of all. That was quite, like you said, a battle, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. You know, last year in the 2010 flotilla, that's when the Israelis attacked the six ships on that flotilla. I was on one of them, not the one, the Marvi Marmara, where nine people were murdered and 50 shot. But this time we had 10 boats as a part of this flotilla that were composed of 22 national campaigns. And our U.S. campaign was the U.S. boat to Gaza, and we named it the Audacity of Hope, to be a challenge to U.S. policies as well as Israeli policies. And the Israelis decided they would use diplomacy this time to try to prevent the flotilla from leaving the waters of Greece, and in a diplomatic offensive that started about, in the springtime, they strong-armed lots of countries to try to get them to prevent their nationals from going on the flotilla. But in Greece, that's where they really applied pressure. So the Greek government ended up not allowing the boats to sail for Gaza. So it was a real battle in Greece for us to keep trying to put pressure on the Greek government to change its mind. And in fact, finally, our U.S. boat tried to escape and break free after two of the vessels had already been sabotaged in acts of terrorism by the Israeli Mossad. We tried to break free and leave, and were stopped by the Coast Guard 3 miles out in the high seas, and commandos ready to board us if we didn't turn back around. And that precipitated then, of course, good protests by our passengers in front of the U.S. Embassy on Independence Day, where our hunger strikers were arrested twice. Here it is on Independence Day, you know, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly. That's what our country stands for, except at the U.S. embassies. And it was quite a scene there for the police arresting in front of the embassy American citizens on Independence Day. But the bottom line was...
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to say, tell us about the what you mentioned, the acts of sabotage of two boats by Mossad. What happened and what gave you the, you know, the idea that it was Mossad that had done it?
Well, the propeller axle of two of the ships, one that was in Turkey and then one that was in Greece, were sliced in the same manner. And although the Israeli government has not yet admitted responsibility for it, they did last year admit that two of the boats on that first flotilla had been sabotaged, that the steering mechanisms had been damaged by Mossad. So it's just too suspicious that in two different countries, the same type of acts of terrorism were done to these ships and cutting the shaft to the propellers. So I think that eventually Israel will formally acknowledge that they did that. In the meantime, there's just no doubt in my mind that they were the ones behind that.
What is the situation in Gaza right now? We know that recently Israel had another campaign against them because allegedly some rockets had been shot from there to Israel, but, you know, it seems like that's not exactly really what happened anyway.
Well, it's true. There's been an increased level of violence. It started again about 4 weeks ago when a group of people came across the Egyptian border into Israel and shot up an Israeli bus, killed five people, and wounded, I think it was 14 others. Israel has yet to, although initially they said that they felt that these were militants that had come from Gaza into Egypt and then back through coming across the border into Israel. Those claims have been silenced now, and they have not been able to provide any evidence at all that it was actually militants that came from Gaza. You know, there are other groups in the Middle East, to include those that are in Egypt, that have been furious that the Egyptian government has been selling oil to Israel, and in fact, a pipeline that brings oil from Egypt into Israel has been attacked numerous times. So But anything that happens to Israel is immediately blamed on Gaza militants and is used as the rationale for massive retaliation of F-16s, Apache helicopters, blowing up all sorts of stuff, and, of course, killing innocent civilians. So that's been one of the hot spots now. And, of course, it comes within a month of a discussion in the U.N. about the future of Palestine. So the Israelis are doing everything they can to put blame onto Hamas and people in Gaza for anything that happens. So it's very good to be suspicious and to really keep prodding to find out who's really behind these acts that the Israelis are using for retaliation against the people in Gaza and the West Bank.
Well, speaking of that, this is a little bit off the subject, but what you just said made me think of something. We're coming up very closely on the 10th anniversary of September 11th, 2001, and there still is many, many unanswered questions about what exactly happened on that day. However, whatever happened that day, the U.S. government used that event to go into Iraq and Afghanistan. Now we have a new regime that is still saying that we were attacked on 9/11 to continue, you know, the wars Bush started, but then to start some more of our own. Do you see any parallels with that and what's been happening in Israel?
Well, certainly using any sort of incident in order to curtail civil liberties, to curtail protests, to make people afraid so that they won't challenge government policies, there are definite parallels. Israel does that to scare the Israeli population, to make sure that the Israeli citizenry are scared to death of anything called a Palestinian. And it's tragic. I mean, the racism now that the State of Israel sponsors, the second-class citizens of Palestinians who are Israeli citizens and yet are treated so horribly by the government that has given them citizenship. The parallels are very strong, and it all boils down to authoritarian governments, ours and theirs, who are trying to curtail dissent and trying to keep the publics in each one of those countries as sheep, unwilling to challenge government policies.
Well, tell us, I know that to raise money to buy a boat from the U.S. for the Gaza Freedom Flotilla and to equip it and, you know, all of the campaign was a long one for you guys. And I know you were involved. You've been on the show talking about it many months ago. Tell us about just the process of getting the boat and what you had to go through. And is this something that's being talked about for next year?
Surely. Oh, what a dream that was. When I came back from the first flotilla, there were only 14 Americans that were on that first one out of 700 people. And when I came back, I felt that it was critical that we, the U.S. public, the U.S. citizens, have our own boat to not only challenge Israeli policies, but also our own U.S. policies. So the whole group got together, and we formed a little committee and started fundraising for this boat that we were going to call the Audacity of Hope, to be right in the face of the Obama administration. And we initially thought that if we could raise $370,000 based on budgets that had been given to us by groups that had tried to get boats to Gaza earlier, that that would be it, that we could buy a boat and outfit it and be ready to roll with that. And so we fundraised and fundraised and fundraised. Oh, my God. And many others were out and about all year long fundraising. And thank God to the generosity of the American public was just heartwarming. That people really said, yeah, we've got to challenge these policies. And so we raised that money. In fact, we raised more than that, which was good because it turned out that, like most things that deal with boats, it never costs what you think it's going to. That's the reality. So eventually we ended up fundraising and getting about $450,000. And with that, I know, it's amazing. I've never, you know, you and I have both been involved in a lot of projects, and they are definitely shoestring budget projects. And this one, it just goes to show you that if you come up with a concept that really hits the heartstrings, that people in small amounts of money, I mean, we didn't have any major donors. It was all small amounts. They will respond. And with that money, we went on a search, and I was part of the search committee. Some of Lori Arbeiter, our good friend Lori Arbeiter, and Jane Hirschman and myself, none of us who had had anything to do with boats before, we were the search committee, and so we scoured several countries for boats, finally found one, and got it purchased and outfitted, and it was, in my opinion, the best boat in the whole flotilla. It was about 104 feet long, and we had it outfitted with 10 days of food and water to be able to be out on the high seas for a long period of time in case we got stalled out there. But little knowing that we would be stalled in Athens, that the Greek government would forbid these ships to sail for Gaza. But when we did try to sail, we tried to escape and were met with the commandos and then dragged back to the port. And then our captain put on trial and then fast going on in front of the embassy and huge outpourings of telephone calls and emails to the State Department and the U.S. Embassy to complain about all of this. I mean, we ended up getting a heck of a lot of publicity for the flotilla, which in turn was the question of why is the flotilla going to Gaza, and then you could talk about the issues of Gaza. So
yes.
Although we didn't make it to Gaza, still the publicity for what's going on and the terrible plight of the people that live in Gaza was out there for the world to see.
Well, what are the plans for next year?
Mm-hmm. Well, there was one of the 10 boats that actually did make it as far as 40 miles off the shores of Gaza before it was stopped by the Israeli military. That boat did not sail from Greece. It sailed from France. And so it was not caught up in the Greek prohibition against sailing. So we have 9 boats that are left. And needless to say, they will sail again. We're not saying at this point from where, and we're not saying when, but they will sail again. And we will not stop these flotillas until the Israeli government and the U.S. government end the naval blockade of Gaza. We'll just keep going and going and going.
Well, right on. I find that the pro-Gaza or the Free Gaza movement and the pro-Palestinian movement in the United States is small, but they're very, very dedicated and committed, aren't they? Isn't that movement?
Indeed it is. And between working for the Gaza flotilla, that concept, but things such as the boycott, divestment, and sanction program, it's unbelievable what effect in the last 2 years that concept has had, that people are going into their supermarkets and their merchandise stores and checking to see what is in there that comes from Israel, but it's actually products from the occupied territories, which is illegal for an occupier to use those. Things like the Ahava beauty products, the mineral resources. So the BDS campaign is going strong. And then right in your area, in the Bay Area, and then up in Portland, Oregon, is a remarkable public education tool, which is posters that have now been allowed to be put on buses and cable cars in the San Francisco area and the Portland area that say, just a statement that says, "Isn't it time the U.S. ends the military aid to Gaza or to Israel?"
Right on.
They've gone through the process of getting the city councils to approve these messages, and it does cause great discussion and controversies in these communities, and that's what we want. We want the discussion about what's going on in the West Bank, East Jerusalem, and in Gaza.
Well, as you know, the pro-Israeli lobby is very well-funded and very strong, so that shows great courage for those cities to allow those posters to be put on the buses and on the BART.
It really does, and it's a change from last year, what happened in Seattle, where some similar types of messages went up, and then the Seattle board for their public transportation system caved to tremendous pressure from pro-Israeli groups and had them removed. And so this time, we hope that both Portland and San Francisco hold strong and say that this is a statement of fact about U.S. government aid, and isn't it time to stop $3 billion a year that we give to the Israeli military just in military aid alone?
Right. Well, Anne, we have about, 5 or 10 minutes left, and tell us about your recent trip to South Korea.
Yes, I went there last week in support of South Korean activists that are trying to stop the construction of a naval base on a pristine island called Jeju Island, which is about 100 miles south of the mainland of Korea. And this naval base, which is under construction, much to the dismay of the people who live along this beautiful coastline on this tropical island. I mean, it's really remarkable how close it is to South Korea, and what in one way it is in a strategic area. It's to the west of Japan, it's to the east of China, and to the south of Korea. The Koreans say they need yet one more military base, and as you well know from your trip to Korea a couple of years ago, the whole country is filled with military bases, of U.S. bases and of South Korean bases and of joint bases. I mean, it's one of the most militarized countries in the world, and yet the Korean government, at the behest of the U.S. government, who wants to have a foothold a little bit closer into the Chinese mainland, and it wants to have naval vessels that are carrying the Aegis missile system to be a part of the U.S. missile defense system. So they've convinced the Koreans to tear up one of these beautiful islands to put a naval, and as we all know, the South Koreans, they've got an activist community that is strong and brave.
Yes, they do.
Holy smokes.
They're pretty radical.
While I was there, the mayor of this little village, who is furious that this beautiful place that has a very unique shoreline, it's not a beach, it's actually a volcanic plate that's there that's quite, it's gorgeous, just gorgeous. And the place has been designated as a World Heritage Site, for God's sakes. And,
wow.
And that's the place that they want to put this base. The little island is known as the Island of Peace. It's known as the island, the Women's Island. And it's the place where women free divers dive to get marine life, you know, that they come back up and sell. So it's unique. And women are really taking a leading role in trying to stop this naval base. While I was there, the mayor of this little town of Kanjong heard that they were going to be moving a giant crane in the base, and he went racing down there to try to stop the crane from moving. And as they've got a wonderful mobilization system. They have on a community center, they have a siren system that is louder than the tsunami warning system we have here in Hawaii. I mean, when that thing goes off, the whole island knows that something's happening. And little ladies that are the farmers that are out in their land that are farming, and you know, with their big brimmed hats and their jackets on to protect them against the sun, and knee rubber boots. All of a sudden, they just throw down their tools, their implements, and hop on their little motor scooters, and you see a whole convoy of women on these motor scooters racing to see what's happened, what emergency is going on, and that the emergency was to try to stop this crane, and five people got arrested in stopping it, and as the police were bringing them out of the naval base, we had a blockade of one of the gates. They brought them through another gate. The fast runners raced down, got in front of the truck that was bringing them out, stopped it, and then everybody caught up with them and surrounded it. And then the police came, the riot police, to protect the van. And then, in a remarkable thing, all of a sudden there were probably 400 citizens that were there who then surrounded the police and wouldn't let the police move. And for 8 hours there was a standoff with the police being encircled by the people. Well, tragically, the mayor's still in jail, and a Catholic priest who is along the lines of Father Roy Bourgeois and Father Louis Vitale, who challenged everything, he's also now in jail because he climbed up on top of the police van to exhort the crowd, you know, to stay firm, don't let this van move. So it was really quite a thrilling sight to see, and we certainly need from the U.S. perspective to put pressure on our government to say, you know, the U.S. don't need to be pushing other governments to have more military bases for our own strategic purposes. So if calling the State Department and the Department of Defense to say lay off this, you know, don't push for this base would be a useful thing to do, because the Korean embassy, if you call them in Washington and complain about Jeju Island becoming a military base, they will say, call your State Department, call your Defense Department. It's out of our hands. So So let's try to get that stopped.
That's the problem. You know, everywhere that I've gone, and you know this too, the people don't want U.S. military bases or installations anywhere near them. But against the wishes of the people of the area, the U.S. government and the local government, or the national government, collaborate to overrule these people's wishes. When I was in Okinawa, I went to this beautiful, beach by one of the islands on Okinawa, and they, the people don't want a U.S. Marine base extended there. As a matter of fact, they were going to put landfill right in the middle of the ocean for a landing strip. And those people went out in boats, and they, took over the construction platforms, and they wouldn't leave. And every time, a construction ship tried to go out, they'd be out in their little kayaks and their rowboats and stuff, blocking them. But they asked me, the people asked me, Japan and the U.S. are supposed to be democracies. How come they don't listen to the people?
Well, isn't that the truth? I mean, all of these governments that claim to be democracies, to include our own, they don't listen to the people who say we want the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan ended, that we want accountability for torture, that we don't want drones to be used as assassination vehicles for the United States, and yet neither the Bush administration nor the Obama administration are listening to the people. And the people of Japan and Okinawa and of South Korea certainly find themselves in the same position. But we have to just keep pushing and pushing. And the people of Okinawa have had a dramatic effect on U.S. foreign policy. They have forced the removal of U.S. Marines from Okinawa, a portion of them, who tragically are going to be sent to Guam. And now the people of Guam have mounted major protests, saying they don't want the population of their island increased by 25%, which is what would happen with these Marines coming in. So the expansion of the U.S. military and moving around of U.S. military forces is something that we have to be internally vigilant on and raise our voices and help those who are challenging these things.
Well, Anne, what's the next step for you?
Well, I'll be going back to the mainland next week and be working on the October 6th events in Washington, D.C., where Stop the Machine and trying to tie together all of the issues of the economic financial crisis, the wars, all of these things together, and try to find a platform similar to what you did a year ago with the action on the mall.
Yes.
And trying to have a foundation where people from all over the country can come in to be there as putting pressure on our Congress and administration to stop the wars, to the whole range of things, the issues that will be we've been working on for so long. So that's the next big one, and then continuing to speak all over the country and like you, raise our voices on things that we're remarkably and we're dedicated to keep talking about until our governments listen to us.
Well, I'm going to be staying pretty close to home for a little while because Janie's going to have her third baby in a couple weeks.
Oh, my goodness, how wonderful. Wow. Boy,
yeah,
what a little
another
family
little boy.
She's got.
Oh, another little
great.
Boy, yeah. So,
well, give her
so
a
that'll
hug
be my fourth. That'll be my fourth grandbaby, so I'll be home for a little while. But I just wanted to fill you in on something I learned last night. When I was checking in to work out at my gym, I had one of my peace shirts on, and the guy who checked me in looked at my shirt and said, "Well, you know what? Wars are good for our economy." And I said, "Well, if wars are good for our economy, then we should have a great economy because we're in about 6 wars right now. How come our economy sucks?" So,
isn't that the truth? Oh my God!
You know, so we have to keep on connecting those dots, and it's so nice to hear from you, Anne, and hear about all your adventures. And just keep yourself strong, and don't forget to get plenty of rest along the way.
Oh, I'll do that, and you too. And I am going to be in California in the middle of October. I'm going to the Bioneers and then doing some speaking up around your area. So let's get together. I look forward to seeing you.
Oh, absolutely. That'd be great.
Okay. We'll be in touch.
Okay, Ann.
Thanks, Cindy.
Keep up the good work.
Love you.
Talk to you soon.
Okay.
Love you too. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Well, that was our show today. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed our guest, retired Colonel Ann Wright, a tireless worker for peace and for justice. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Scott Cuddy, my webmaster, Rich Bowser, my producer, Mikey, our guest, Ann, and you for listening. As our close today, we're going to be listening to a special report from Vietnam done by one of our listeners, James Rhodes. James interviewed the Venezuelan ambassador. He's on special assignment there in Vietnam for Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Thank you. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
This is Jim Rhodes reporting exclusively for Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox from fascinating downtown Hanoi on the banks of the Red River in the heart of the City for Peace, encompassing over 9 million friendly, beautiful people. Some listeners may remember me as a former resident of Mill Valley, graduate of the College of Marin, and later Kenyatta College in Redwood City, and then San Jose State University. I was married in San Jose, holding elected public office in Santa Clara County at the same time as my wife, Nina, and my father played professional baseball with the San Francisco Giants. It is a huge thrill for me to deliver this special report as Vietnam commemorates National Agent Orange Day. My special guest this segment is the Ambassador of Venezuela to Vietnam, Jorge Rondon.
Today in the offices of Ambassador Jorge Rondon from Venezuela. We're in lovely downtown Hanoi, and I'm reporting exclusively for Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox in the beautiful state of California. Ambassador, can you please inform us how the Venezuelan government and people became involved in the plight of the Vietnamese Agent Orange victims, and what specifically are you doing to assist them?
Well, I would like to start to define our relation. This is a very new embassy here in Hanoi, only 5 years and a half. In fact, I started the relations. President Chavez came here in July 2006. But we have a long time relation to Vietnam, of solidarity, of brotherhood. For example, in 64, one group of guerrilla from the Communist Party of Venezuela has kidnapped the second man of the military mission in Caracas in order to try to save the life of one hero of Vietnam, Huyen Van Choi. This is our first relation to Vietnam. From then on, we have developed a very good relation to Vietnam. And when I came here, I knew many things about Vietnam, especially concerning the victims of Agent Orange. And well, my first activity was to approach to some small school in order to offer some help according with my budget. And in fact, the first year we opened the embassy, we gave some support, economic support, to buy some machines that they need for the medical treatments. Later on, we organized a very good visit to the Baba, and we just not only to express political solidarity, but also we gave some financial support to Baba. Sometimes we gave 1,500, etc. But the most important is that we are not only solidary to Agents Orange, we are solidary to all the Vietnamese who have suffered this imposed war and the pretension of the imperialists to take this country, and of course the victims of the Agent Orange are the most, how can we say, the most visible of this conflict that still didn't finish because the victims continue. And this is the reason why we have a special relation to VAVA and to the Agent Orange. It's a question of solidarity, of humanity reasons, or if we can conclude, we can say of love for to Vietnamese people.
Well, thank you, Ambassador. That explains a lot for our American viewing audience, but I should also point out that even though the Communist Party in Venezuela at that time did kidnap that, I believe he was an American military official,
yes,
although he was released unharmed per an agreement that was made, the United States did not keep its bargain because the person that was supposed to have been released here was executed in Saigon.
Yes.
So that was very unfortunate that the Venezuelan people kept their end of the bargain, but unfortunately we did not.
Yeah.
So this is the foundation of the relationship between the Venezuelan people and the people in Vietnam. And yeah, we are so grateful for this interview, and I thank you very much. Thank you, Ambassador.
Welcome.
This concludes my special report for Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. This is Jim Rhodes signing off from beautiful downtown Hanoi, the city for peace and the capital of Vietnam for over 1,000 years. Truly an excellent place for foreigners to experience. Good day, Cindy, and thanks for this opportunity. Toi Eo Vietnam. We'll be right back.
Have a bone and biscuit sugar. Yeah, take a sweet little time about it. Hey, let's have a bone. Yeah, take a sweet little time. About it. Let me daddy in the place to just get out of here.